So we're reading today from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, chapter 6, entitled The Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And today, text 79 and 80. So I'll read the translation for 79, then we can recite 80 together. Gopinath Acharya continued, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is celebrated as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those who are ignorant in this connection find the conclusion of knowledgeable men very difficult to understand. Text 80. Translation: The disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya retaliated. By what evidence do you conclude that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord? Gopinath Acharya replied, The statements of authorized acharyas who understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are proof. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Since the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there have been many pseudo-incarnations in India who do not present authorized evidence. 500 years ago, the disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, being very learned scholars, were certainly right in asking Gopinath Acharya for evidence. If a person proposes that he himself is God, or that someone else is an incarnation of God, or God himself, he must cite evidence from Shastra to prove his claim. Thus, the request of the Bhattacharya's disciples is quite bona fide. Unfortunately, at the present moment, it has become fashionable to present someone as an incarnation of God without referring to the Shastras. Before an intelligent person accepts someone as an incarnation of God, however, he must ask about the evidence. When the disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya challenged Gopinath Acharya, he immediately replied correctly, We must hear the statements of great personalities in order to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna is established as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by statements from many authorized persons, such as Brahma, Narad, Vyasadeva, Asita, and Arjun. Similarly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also established as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by evidence from the same personalities. This will be explained later. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakya Chakshrimi Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. A very interesting discussion here taking place between Sri Gopinath Acharya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Just following Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's first encounter with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is, of course, as we know, of the Mayavad school. He's into monism, the oneness of the Lord and the living entity and the whole range of Mayavad consequences that come. But he has been intrigued and you can say his interest has been caught by Lord Chaitanya's extraordinary display of ecstatic symptoms when he fainted. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, although he is of the impersonal variety by his training and initiation, etc., in the Mayavad school, he is still a very refined person who understands how to deal with other individuals respectfully, even though he may not agree with them. And so you have, over these few pages, these few verses, you have a very interesting type of discussion taking place. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is a respected personality. He has a substantial following. He's seen as an authority. And he is from a high-class sampradaya. And the interaction between him and Lord Chaitanya is interesting. Because by convention and by comparison, Lord Chaitanya is of a lower order. And that we discussed a couple of weeks ago in the class. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya actually said, okay, I'm very impressed with Sri Krishna Chaitanya, and I like Sri Krishna, but Chaitanya I have a slight problem with, because it is an indicator of indicator of a brahmachari in a second order Mayavad school, because he had taken initiation from Keshav Bharati. So that was the hierarchy, and we mentioned that. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has in his mind the idea that he will reform Lord Chaitanya and train him nicely, which is a nice feeling from his side. Now the devotee associates of the Lord, who in some cases happen to be intimately related to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, like Gopinath Acharya, they don't take very kindly to this offer by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, because they say it reeks of a lack of understanding. Behind the sentiment of wanting to help is a fundamental misunderstanding that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Lord, and they do not understand this. So now, in this section, there is a very interesting discussion that takes place where where Gopinath Acharya, persons on his side, as it were, from his angle of philosophical presentation, are trying to convince Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his disciples as to the real identity of Lord Chaitanya. And so when Gopinath Acharya makes a bold statement like this, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is celebrated as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those who are ignorant find the conclusion of knowledgeable men very difficult to understand. That's quite a direct statement to put forward. And by sort of conventional standards, it could be seen to be quite confrontational. He's indirectly, kind of indirectly, but very very strongly implying that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is not knowledgeable, and therefore he is rejecting the statements of other knowledgeable persons. But there is a special relationship that we should also take into consideration between Gopinath Acharya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and that is a relationship where they would frequently debate, because Gopinath Acharya is definitely of the great personal school and a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has a more sort of philosophical oneness type of mentality. So they would have many arguments. But they were in one sense equals by convention, brother-in-law, etc. And so they would have these arguments, discussions, debates. Occasionally one or the other would get angry, as we will see later on. But it is not taken seriously. Therefore it describes a culture whereby issues can be debated with people of differing opinions, and that is healthy. That is actually a healthy way to proceed, because it allows each person to investigate their own shortcomings in presentation and understanding. Even if we actually have the Siddhanta correct, I don't know about you, but certainly there have been occasions when someone who might not have access to the Siddhanta that we have access to manages to really defeat you through non-arguments, but through a presentation that's very convincing. And that's actually very educational, because you realize that having received the highest truth from Prabhupada, the greatest philosophy, that we might not possess the actual ability to present the philosophical conclusions with potency. And that is potency which only comes from Lord Chaitanya. It is not by actually extensive learning, extensive study, that we gain the potency to change people's conclusions. That potency is directly imparted by Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So it is an indicator of a great soul, a great Vaishnav. One of the ways you detect a great Vaishnav is how a great Vaishnav induces many others to become Vaishnavas through his powerful presentation of the Siddhanta. And so this is what Gopinath Acharya is trying. Obviously, for many years, these debates have been going on between Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Gopinath Acharya and others. And they're both set in their ways, and they both have their strong convictions. But here's something interesting is going to happen, because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has arrived. And whenever Lord Chaitanya arrives somewhere, the norm becomes completely perturbed. And the norms and accepted standards all change. So we are in the middle of this very interesting discussion, but it's a discussion which is based upon rigid presentation. And the disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya are asking what Prabhupada considers a very valid question. By what evidence do you conclude that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord? Okay, anyone can say anything. And I certainly know I have many discussions with the devotees here at, during prasadam and different times. And someone presents something, and then sometimes I dispute the authenticity of the source by which they gained that knowledge, and then we have a good, healthy debate and discussion. So that's nice. To actually want to know an authorized source for information is very important. Here we're discussing two concepts. One is the process by which we arrive at authorized information, authorized knowledge, and this can be on any subject. It can be material, it can be spiritual, it can be anything. Authority is authority. And then there's another consideration also as to a special consideration due to the topics concerning the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which can be served, the understanding of which can be served up to a certain point by certain types of evidence. But at a certain point, those types of evidence start to fall short. So evidence is a very key item in Vedic culture. And great logicians, great argumentative persons. Actually, Lord Chaitanya participated in many discussions based upon logic in his youth and annoyed many, many people who were just waiting for him to become a devotee rather than engaging so much in this dry speculative logic. But this concept of logic, reasoning, is very important because it allows us to have a robust way forward for accepting and rejecting things. Now, acceptance and rejection is typically, shastrically considered to be a symptom of duality. You know, we like certain things, we don't like certain things. Certain things align with our nature, certain things don't. Therefore, we accept some things and we reject some things. Raga, dvesha, these dualities are constantly described in the Gita. However, for spiritual progress, Rupa Goswami has explained that it is important for us to still apply this principle of acceptance and rejection, but within a very careful set of parameters. We are supposed to accept situations that are favorable for our spiritual progress, and we are supposed to reject situations, circumstances, and association which will take us down. Now, for a Mahabhagavat Uttama Adhikari on the pure transcendental platform, whatever happens, whatever association they're in, doesn't really affect them because their own potency and their own strength is so strong. But for the rest of us who might not be on that platform, we can be affected by false presentations, by speculations presented in a very nice, eloquent manner. And that's very dangerous. That's why there are certain boundaries that we are advised to put in place, what to accept and what to reject. So if that is the basis upon which we are to proceed in life, then we should understand what is the basis for accepting and rejecting. And therefore you have these different types of evidence that are described. And this is called praman, Vedic evidence. Now this is a subject which is described in varying levels of detail at various places. We know there are three ways by which we acquire knowledge. Right? What are the three ways by which we acquire knowledge? Shabda, Anuman, and Pratyaksha. And what do they mean? Pratyaksha, direct sense perception. Anuman? Shabda is oral reception. But one other factor is there, Shabda, from an authority. There's many people are speaking lots of shabdas during the day, but shabda praman is considered shabda which comes from an authority. And then the middle one, anuman?
It means to follow the mind or to reach a logical conclusion.
Okay. Yes, by inference. By not quite just whatever the mind dictates, The actual process of coming to a logical conclusion or inference means you relegate the mind to a lower status immediately. So with pratyaksha, you acquire knowledge through direct sense perception. You know, this is a table, this is hard, it might be slightly cold. The sense perception items. And then if you analyze enough of those items, you could conclude that this is a table. You know, you could infer, okay, it's got four legs. If it walks like something, if it talks like something, it probably is something. You know, as the saying goes. So you can come to a conclusion based upon comparison with what you've seen before, what you've heard, and reasons, and reasoned arguments. So pratyaksha and anuman can bring you some knowledge. But it is limited because we have limits. And what are our limits? There are four limits. This is a Bhakta course revision session. Imperfect senses, okay, another one? Being? Making mistakes, yes? Imperfect senses, making mistakes? Being illusioned. And the fourth one? Tendency to cheat. Tendency to cheat ourselves and to cheat others. That means that pratyaksha and anuman are potentially at risk. Because if your senses are imperfect, your pratyaksha is going to be imperfect. If your propensity is there to cheat, and you have a propensity to be illusioned, that means that any inferences that you draw are also likely to be flawed. With the best intents in the world, these things have nothing to do with your intentions. They are realities of our conditioned nature, that we will make mistakes and we do have a tendency to be illusioned. So even if you think, I am very logically, soundly discussing and producing arguments, still there is a factor outside of your control, which is your weakness, that can counteract that. So therefore it is a factor to take into consideration. And therefore Prabhupada explains that shabda, knowledge received from an authorized source, which can be an authorized person, or it can be the conclusive statements of Shastra, are the highest authority. Because they are coming from authorized persons who are taking knowledge from an authorized source transcendental to material limitations. And that's the point. Something that is aporusheya, something that is completely transcendental, not subject to contamination, is the only genuine source for transcendental knowledge. And therefore, all our knowledge that comes in the devotional line, comes in the Shastric line, comes originally from Sri Krishna. Because he's the person free from all defects and outside of this source. Now, in the whole field of logic, Jiva Goswami explains in his Tattva Sandarbha, he gives a whole discussion on how Tattva is established. And he presents 10 types of evidence, 10 ways that we can acquire knowledge, 10 ways that are considered something to back up your stance. So I'll just read those quickly, because it might be interesting. So the first is Arshya, which is the utterance of a sage or a demigod. So here is a person who is considered somewhat competent, somewhat of an authority, somewhat learned, somewhat experienced. And you know the phrase, Vidya Vinaya Sampanni, the learned and gentle sage or brahmana sees with equal vision. So there's the quality of sages like Kapila, Gautam, Patanjali, etc. And therefore an opinion coming from such a person is worthy of consideration and potentially can be supplied as evidence. So the next one is called Upaman, or comparison. So you gain knowledge or you attempt to describe an unfamiliar object by comparison to something that is familiar. So that is the type of consideration that happens with analogies. Now, Prabhupada gives many analogies in the books. One of the famous analogies that we all know is the car and driver analogy for the soul. So that's one way to try to understand something. But we should also understand that no analogy is proof. Because an analogy does not establish that something is true. All that an analogy does is it, in your mind, helps break down some of the barriers of resistance towards accepting something by comparing it to something that you've already accepted. But that is not proof. That is just a way to smooth your own mentality into now being open to accepting that here is a soul which controls the body. You have to make a rigid and direct comparison of how the body matches the car in every way for you to conclude from the car and driver analogy that we have a soul or that we are a soul. That analogy does not prove anything, and no analogy proves anything. So when a person quotes an analogy as proof, it is an incomplete understanding. Proof has to be robust. But an analogy can help make an unfamiliar situation more palatable to us. So that is one type of evidence called comparison. Another one is arthapatti, presumption. We assume something. The way it's written is we assume an unknown fact in order to account for a known fact that is otherwise inexplicable. So here's an example. There's a fat person, and he does not eat during the daytime. So therefore, one can safely assume he eats at night. Right? He's fat, so it means he clearly must eat. But he doesn't eat in the daytime, so therefore, by conclusion, he eats at night. So that's the that's an illustration of this example. You presume something based upon sense. What is sensible? So that's an interesting way. And then another one is abhava, non-existence. And it gets into a bit of a technical description, so I'm not actually going to go too much into these. I'm just going to mention them briefly. It is effectively non-perception of something that is a qualified object by a qualified sense of the non-existence of that object. Okay, it's a little complex, so we'll move on. But these are techniques which are employed by logicians in attempting to put forward evidence that can be considered as part of a debate. So the fifth one is sambhava, inclusion. So if something is included in a higher quantity, then the lower quantity item is also included. So if there's a principle that applies to something, I'll give you an example. For example, you can say fish swim in the sea. So then you can say a tuna swims in the sea, right? The wider category has already been accepted as swimming in the sea, and therefore a tuna, which is a subset of the wider category, can also be said to be of the same qualities. So you can take a principle which is known in a generalized sense, and therefore you can use a small subset of that and claim it also inherits the same properties. So it makes quite good sense, actually. These are all systems that probably often we have applied ourselves. But it's nice to just have them enumerated like this. Then a very important one which Prabhupada refers to is aitiha, tradition. When there is a tradition or a common belief that has withstood the test of time. Now these days we tend to try to question all beliefs and any traditions. We think that every tradition has to be fully enumerated, fully described. If it's not written in Prabhupada's purports, it must be completely non-bona fide. And a speculation by someone, even though a tradition may have existed for 5,000 years. Not quite the right way to perceive the world. There are many, many traditions in the world, some of which have withstood the test of time, and some of which have led to the existence of cultures, communities, upliftment. Some traditions are definitely well worth forgetting. Because they have been endorsed and promoted by individuals who have had nefarious intentions. They're not so valuable. But an intelligent person can consider what is the benefit and what is not the benefit. So tradition is also important. Another one is cheshta or gesture. And this is acquiring knowledge through bodily gestures. So some examples are given that, you know, sometimes you make a V sign to indicate victory or a thumbs up. That is considered an indicator of something positive has happened. So it's definitely more tenuous than the others. Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki. And there are sometimes auspicious mudras which are done in connection with deity worship and others, to convey certain messages. Certain signs are made to the deities through mudras. So it's a similar kind of principle. Then we come to pratyaksha, which we've already discussed, one of the 10, direct perception, things that we see with our senses. And where our senses fail, we use tools, instruments, scientific instruments, microscopes, telescopes, a whole range of complex items. Then we have anuman, inference, which we've discussed through logic, deduction. And then finally, as we have discussed, shabda. So shabda means revealed knowledge, and literally means sound. Now these are 10 ways that we can acquire knowledge and consider something valuable in a discussion. If someone says, oh, this person said something to me the other day, that's not typically considered acceptable in a discussion. Unless the person is of the first category, someone somewhat of an authority, a senior person whose words can be given more weight than the words you would attribute to just the average person talking prajalpa. The problem comes in our lives when we accept someone's prajalpa, someone's speculations, someone's false understandings, and we rebroadcast them. That becomes a problem. Many people are illusioned in this world to some degree or the other. And that's just the status of all people, really, to some extent. The problem comes when we start broadcasting that illusion as a fact, or start producing that illusion as some type of evidence or something to be taken seriously by someone else. That's when you may have a problem, because that is how, through Chinese whispers, you end up with a completely altered, contaminated view of reality. It doesn't bring upliftment to anyone. So we have to be a little focused on making sure that any arguments we present are based upon these. Solid logic and reasoning is a valid thing. It is not that in every argument you have to deride logic and reasoning and say that only things that have directly been spoken to me are worthy of consideration. Well, if you have a genuine inquiry, that is the whole basis for the Bhagavad Gita, right? Krishna speaks the profound truth, the unquestioned truth. And what does Arjuna do? Asks him lots of questions. So the idea that we should not question or seek to understand something that is actually very truthful, exalted, and comes from an authorized source is not really accepted in the Vedic system. No one learns anything by a type of conduct which says, just shut up and believe it. That has a very limited effect. You will see some faiths are built on this. And any attempt to question, to discuss, is just thrown out. Just thrown out, ridiculed, suppressed. Well, I didn't come to this movement because someone just told me, shut up and just believe it. And most people are not attracted to this movement because of that mentality. So when we accept things, we accept them on robust basis. On as robust a basis as we can comprehend with the only thing we have, which is our intellect, our mind, our ego. Those are the tools that we have with which to do things. Now those tools are clearly limited. And we do not say that anything processed and accepted by those tools is the truth. The truth is better revealed through shabda, through authorized persons. But if we neglect the importance of our intelligence, mind, and ego in processing and understanding and realizing anything, then all we are doing is simply parrot fashion repeating something with no connection, no connection to us. It may as well be something just blowing in the wind. If it doesn't have a connection with us, if it doesn't transform our consciousness, if it's not something that we work with, work through our faculties, hoping to purify those faculties at the same time by that process, then we are missing something. Sometimes people say, they scan the Veda base when they want to promote some argument. They've developed some agenda that they want to promote. And therefore they go hunting through the Veda base, searching for when did Prabhupada say something that might look like it kind of supports what I would like to propagate. And they come out with a sentence. And that's it. That's where their discussion or presentation stops. And then you say to them, okay, so can you explain that sentence? What does it mean? It doesn't make any sense because it seems to contradict this, 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 this. The person says, oh, stop questioning. It's in Prabhupada's books. It's in the Vedas. Just accept it. That's the level of argumentative capability of some people. It's completely unsatisfactory for anyone who actually wants to understand and move forward. Arjun is presented solid statements by Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom he has accepted at a certain stage in chapter 2, Karpanya Dosha Shishyastiham Shadimam Tuam Prapannam. At that point, he's accepted him as the authority. What is the need to ask questions? Well, there is a great need, because we have not fully accepted or understood. And therefore we need to question and we need to be taught from the authority what the reality is. So that process is essential. So our mind, our intelligence, our ego is part of the equipment we have in this world. It's part of the equipment which allows us to process this world. And we use that to try to process this transcendental knowledge that's coming to us. Why? Because by processing the transcendental knowledge, it will become purified. The impure, contaminated, materialistic, dualistic mind will turn into something that becomes a friend, as the Gita says. The best friend to the spirit soul trapped in the body. It becomes a best friend, it becomes a very nice link. Because all these items, these subtle components, allow us to function in this body, which is not our real nature. This dead lump of matter, full of ignorance, not very knowledgeable, definitely not eternal, is being inhabited by a soul which is completely the opposite. And therefore we need equipment which becomes increasingly purified, so that the contaminating influence doesn't reach us. Therefore, when we address this knowledge of the Gita with our intellect, one who studies this sacred conversation of mine, Krishna says, worships me with his intellect. Krishna doesn't say, disregard your intellect. Definitely Krishna says, the intellect that most people have is highly flawed and not worthy of much respect. But purify that intellect by engaging it in discussions of transcendence. So these methods of acquiring knowledge are very important. They help us to separate nonsensical principles that we accept from sensible, reasoned principles. And a person who is actually truthful by nature never takes shelter of their own opinion. Here we're about to witness a very nice interaction between Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Chaitanya, of course, a very great discussion with Lord Chaitanya, due to come in a few verses, but also between Gopinath Acharya. What's enlightening about these conversations is that there is a mood of upliftment. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is challenging Gopinath Acharya because he wants to come to a superior understanding. Or, if it is established that he has the superior understanding, he wants to establish its superiority versus other inferior understandings. It does not have much to do with the ego. It does not have anything to do with, this is a stance that I have accepted. This is a stance that is my stance. I've been attached to it for many, many years. Therefore, it is correct. and therefore I'm going to keep propagating it. And if you say something, well, I'm going to ignore it and keep repeating my stance. Have you been in a discussion where a person consistently completely ignores what you're saying and just keeps repeating their stance? You've gone through several sentences, several discussions, back and forth, back and forth, and the person is still repeating what they said at the start of the conversation, having completely not processed anything you said during that conversation. Now, some people are simply not capable of processing. The ego is so strong. This is why actual intelligence requires a seriously suppressed ego. It is not possible for an intelligent person to function if their ego is very high. Because an intelligent person is always looking for a superior understanding. And even if they argue, sometimes violently, sometimes very forcefully, it is for the purpose of trying to entice out of another person a superior argument. Because that is all, ultimately, a person who is of that caliber, that's all they want. They don't care, this was my held belief. They're after a superior belief. So if someone presents a superior belief, they will accept it. So that is a kind of a culture and a nature that does not come naturally to most people. Because most people do not really value that. They do not value the truth. If we're actually honest, consider the way we conduct our lives. We're not always after the most truthful, the most accurate, the best possible performance. We're actually after something that makes us feel comfortable, most of the time. Something that helps us have a kind of like a comfortable, cotton woolly kind of feeling in our mind. Maybe a sort of a conditioning of mode of goodness, of pleasantness, happiness, contentment. The truth can sometimes be a little unsettling, it might challenge our faculties a bit. We don't always like it. So we have to be aware that this is a defect in us as well. We do not have a natural affinity for wanting the highest truth. We take a little bit of philosophy, not too much, a little bit of philosophy that makes us feel like we're approaching transcendence, and we work with that for some time. And then the other bits, if someone gives us something which is maybe a little more cutting, we might, okay, it's too much for me right now. I'm just going to stick to my level. And that's fine. It's fine only as long as you don't promote that style of conduct is the best style of conduct. We're not saying that everyone has to be at a stage of perfection all the time. But what we do say is that you only advance if you compare yourself to a higher stage of conduct. If you look around at a poor presentation or a poor example or someone who is acting on the basis of concessions, you know, sometimes concessions are made for people if they're unable to follow a certain standard. Well, a person who is degrading themselves looks at another person for whom a concession has been made and says, look what she's doing, look what he's doing. It must be all right. Stop being so heavy with me. So many people are doing it in our movement. Let's do it ourselves. What's the problem? That's not a mentality that allows one to progress. Because at any point, there will be someone higher than you and there will be someone lower than you. Someone whose practice is greater and someone whose practice is less. If you compare yourself to someone whose practice is less and use that to justify a lower practice for you, you go in which direction? There's only one answer, you go down. If you compare yourself to a more advanced practitioner, someone who has a superior understanding of whatever it is, and you try to come to that standard, you respect that, you worship that person, that concept, you try to please and serve, then you acquire those qualities and you elevate. And that's what we're doing. We've got the Supreme Personality, Krishna. Then we have the supreme form of the supreme devotee, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, the Goswamis, the Parampara. These are persons of perfection who then transfer knowledge through us, through the spiritual master, through other advanced devotees. And therefore, we're in contact with something superior. So in a discussion like this with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Gopinathacharya, Lord Chaitanya, both will present solid, substantial arguments. Both will be very, very happy if they are defeated by a superior argument. They will not be angry or upset. They will be very happy. But one thing they will not do is accept an inferior argument. They will reject that very strongly. You see here, the disciples are getting agitated. The disciples are getting agitated. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gets agitated. Gopinathacharya gets a little agitated later. When they receive what appears to them to be a nonsensical argument, but then they proceed to dismantle that with a superior argument. So see that all as the conduct during a robust and uplifting discussion. There are many discussions which take place between people who neither care for the result. They're just exchanging some words, again, to just make themselves feel good. Many discussions take place like that. One person says some half-baked point, another person supplies another half-baked point, and they're both happy. Oh, we shared some half-baked knowledge amongst ourselves. It's not the way to uplift yourselves. It might be something entertaining, fine. But there are superior arguments that are possible. And here we get a very good illustration of it. So I'm not suggesting everyone should be now arguing all the time. We should be arguing about the merits of Brussels sprouts versus asparagus. You could have a whole long argument where you produce much evidence on those points. That probably won't get you very far. But thinking of Krishna and trying with the best possible way, with the best faculties that we have, to try to think, how can the science of Krishna be presented to people? How do I understand it myself when I have objections to it? This is very healthy and can actually lead to great increase and upliftment for any person who engages in such discussions. That's why Prabhupada encouraged at one point that devotees should have debates. Most debates in the world are just about proving your point, just establishing your ego-based stance and proving it and overriding the other person with your stance. It's very unsatisfactory if you watch a debate like that. Rather, a debate where both people are going to give their full rasa, full strength, full potency, and argue with each other with full potency to come to a higher understanding, that's far more elevating, far more desirable. So I'll stop there. I won't argue any further. But if you have any questions, or you would like to make any arguments which override anything I've said, I'll be more than happy to accept.
Guru Krishna, thank you for the wonderful class. Perhaps I didn't quite understand the difference between shabda, and I forget the technical term when you're receiving knowledge from an authority.
Ah, yes, the demigod. Well, it's a type of shabda, but it's not the ultimate shabda. Because shabda strictly, let me see if I've got the exact statement that Jiva Goswami says. It is, in one sense, something that loosely has to come from an authority, a trustworthy person. Now, in our context, when we use the word shabda and the way Prabhupada uses the word shabda, is to refer to the only real authority who meets that characteristic as being completely competent and completely beyond reproach, and that is Krishna. So in our terminology, when we use the word shabda, we are directly referring to Krishna, Krishna's words. But the other one is, the name for it was Arshya, utterance of a sage or a demigod. So these are persons who are conventionally in positions of authority, but their words should not be taken to be the absolute truth.
Would it also mean it's still shabda if it's received from a sage, but they've receive that knowledge from Krishna?
Yes, so it's the source that's important. Here, in these, we're talking about the source of that knowledge. So if a sage gives a realization or a presentation or gives you some piece of information which hasn't come from another place, then it falls into that category. And so therefore we are, you know, conditioned living entities, but we can also speak Shabda. If we accurately and with realization repeat the message of the words coming from Krishna, not necessarily the direct words, not parrot fashion repeating, but the message, the essence, the purport of it, that is considered Shabda. So yes, anyone can do that, but this is a special case where due to a particular position or you give an opinion which is somewhat original, which might not be traceable back to an original source.
Thank you.
Ian Brumman, then Sam.
Hi Krishna. Thank you so much for your class, amazing as always. I just had a question in regards to reading and in regards to getting this knowledge, because definitely we have to read and understand more. You know, at times I can speak for myself, there's lots of reading, but not much is being retained. And, you know, you probably miss a lot when, you know, probably engaging in conversations and the stuff but you haven't gotten like an in-depth foundation of. So is there any benefit that's still gotten from reading stuff and still not getting much from it? And what are your tips that you can suggest for us or new readers trying to kind of get the philosophy and imbibe it a little bit more?
Yeah, there is never any harm through reading. Through reading, hearing, even if it's not going in. Yasya vai shriyamanayam Krishna parama purushe bhaktir utpadyate pumsam shoka moha bayapaha. Just by simply giving oral reception, Krishna parama purushe, to the topics of the Supreme Purusha Krishna, bhaktir utpadyate pumsam, bhakti arises in the heart. Shoka moha bhayapaha, lamentation, fear, illusion sent away. This is what happens if you simply just hear transcendental subject matters of Lord Krishna, his pastimes. It will happen eventually. There is no harm. This is not a process of memory, although memory is a useful tool, you know, along with our mind, intelligence, and memory, which functions with those items, is a useful tool as well. From me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Krishna would not be speaking of it if it was not of some value. Matas smritir jnanam apohanam cha. But Krishna supplies intelligence. From me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So if we pray to Krishna, he will give us the memory to remember transcendental subject matters. But there's another factor as well, that hearing, listening can be receiving items largely, but not completely, in a category of jnana. There's another category also which is important, that's vigyan. So yesterday was Gita Jayanti, and if you go through the chapters of the Gita, there are some exceptional nuggets of wisdom there. But chapter 7, Vigyan Yoga, knowledge has to be transformed into realization. It is ultimately when it is when it is transformed into realization, it is beneficial. It becomes part of us. It's as I was saying, it's something that works with our identity. When our ego, our mind, our intelligence are all aligned and absorbed in a particular type of knowledge, and that can be called realized knowledge, then our existence isn't just processing it as some information, but it is something that governs how we see the world, how we act, how we make decisions. It becomes something far more concrete to us. So we can never really reject our role within our comprehending of Shastra. It is not meant to be literally in one ear, out the other, or just floating around in the head but not connecting with us. It is supposed to connect. And so a final tip for how it's supposed to connect is that it should be done in the association of devotees. Because satam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavanti ratkarna rasayana katha the joshanat ashva pavarga vartmani shraddha ratir bhaktir anukramishyati. So in the association of devotees, Knowledge comes in through the ear and goes straight to the heart. Often it goes in the ear, sometimes out the other ear, or sometimes reflects straight back out of the same ear. So if you want it to go in, it should be done in the association of devotees, satam prasangan, in the association of saintly persons. Shraddha ratir bhaktir anukramishyati. So shraddha, faith, taste, bhakti, these arise when you're in the association of advanced devotees. So there is no harm at all to hearing and hearing and hearing until you go deaf. Because that will awaken your transcendental senses. And even if you feel nothing is happening, something is happening. It might not, maybe there's a trigger that's required for it to manifest, for that conviction to happen, for that vigyan to be imparted. Patience, dhairyap is an important activity. Sambrahma?
Thank you for the wonderful class, Rubu. You just jogged my memory from when I first came here for the Be a Monk course 3 years ago, and Kripa Mahaprabhu gave us our first talk. Mm. And he said this point that you've been talking about. He said that I'm on a journey, and I'm trying to find the highest thing. If you can give me something that's higher than this, then I'll happily accept it. But so far, this is the highest thing I found. Mm. And that just really struck me, because it's the first time I'd heard that from everyone else I'd met. It was trying to convince me of their philosophy, their spirituality. So
yes,
that's all I remember from his whole talk. But it really struck me, like, wow, okay.
Mm.
Like, and then really I was receptive to whatever he was going to say, because it really kind of transformed my consciousness. That
yes, point. It is our lineage. It is our mission. What we've inherited from the different paramparas, the four different sampradaya systems. The idea of questioning study is an essential component of it all. The whole book is questions and answers. The Bhagavatam is full of questions and answers. These discussions that are taking place here, all questions and answers. It's something that is meant to touch us. Not meant to be something that floats around our consciousness, and we kind of pretend we're aligned to this particular club. We might pay a membership fee, we might do something, and then we think, okay, that's it. You have to realize it. It has to connect with you, it has to transform your existence. Then it's real. And we are looking at all times for the highest, most elevated revelation. And certainly I can also say the same thing, but I've not found anything superior. There is nowhere where such a description of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, His name, fame, form, qualities, pastimes, characteristics, likes, dislikes, or as Prabhupada says, His name, address, town, location, name of His mother, name of His father, are described in such detail. Nowhere. And with such authority and with such a shastric basis. So, definitely, there's enough there to keep us convinced for a lifetime. Prajna Prabhu?
When you mentioned about in association with devotees, or just being in their association, I suppose Narada Muni was another one, wasn't he? When he was a child, he was listening to the sages, taking their remnants and so on and so forth, and that changed his life. And I was just thinking, Judd Barrett, through his sequence of realization, that even as a deer, he went to get association because he'd remembered his previous life. He just went to be in association with devotees and just listen to them as a deer.
Mm.
You know, it shows the power of this association. He realized just to be there in their presence was very, very powerful. and influential. So Narada Muni, I suppose, and Judd Barrett are wonderful examples of this. Somehow the magic formula of hearing from realized souls. It's a very wonderful thing, you know. So,
thank you. They're both very nice examples. You have a question? Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.